This case deals with one issue, and so I guess which is dissimilar to the other two cases today, but nevertheless, I believe it a very critical issue. The issue simply stated is whether the amount of loss used to calculate the guideline sentence was appropriate in this case. Judge Stagg indicated.
Move the mic there.
I'm sorry. Judge Stagg, and the reason it's important is that during the sentencing hearing, he said on more than one occasion, he indicated that he did not know what guideline he would end up at. However, whatever guideline he found, he would impose a sentence at the bottom of the guideline. So when we went in, that was an issue before us. A little background information. Mr. Corbell pled guilty to one count of making a false statement to First Louisiana Bank. After a sentencing hearing that lasted parts of 2 days, Judge Stagg adopted the loss figure in the PSR of $242,000. That led to an offense level of 15, criminal history of 1, guideline range 12 to 18 months, and Mr. Corbell, as Judge Stagg had indicated, was sentenced to 18 months.
Now, wait a minute. The guidelines was what? What was the guideline he calculated?
The guideline range was offense level 15. The guideline range was 12 to 18 months. And Judge Stagg imposed, as he had indicated he would, the bottom of the guidelines, it was 18 to 24 months. He imposed an 18-month sentence.
Okay, I couldn't, that's why I'm...
It's important that the PSR in this matter got the loss figure from an FBI agent who had been working the case for at least 5 years. You can find that in government's Defense Exhibit 5, where their calculation going into the day of the sentence was $242,846. Judge Stagg rounded that down to $242,000. That was the figure going in.
That was the FBI's calculation of the loss?
Yes, sir, going into the day. And that's found in D-5 that we filed in the evidence. We objected to the calculation. It was duly noted, and that brings us to this court. The government's calculation at the sentencing was you start out with a total of $1,248,000. This is the first problem I had because in the pre-sentence report, the probation officer said that the loss was $1,115,000. Judge Stagg said he was going to lose the larger amount, so I'm going to demur to that. I'm not going to argue that point. But if you come up with $1,248,000 as the amount of the loss, my first issue is, this property sold on the public records of Bossier Parish for $1.3 million. My first argument, and it sounds rather simple, but I still think it's right, it was sold for $1.3 million. That's the fair market value. It exceeded the amount of the loss, so there was no loss, and the court erred in establishing any loss. Judge Stagg,
that was a phony transaction.
He said it was a phony transaction, but nevertheless, the bank involved itself with that transaction, and the bank sold the property. If somebody goes to the public records of Bossier Parish and looks, the property belongs to Industrial Warehouse. It does not belong to the First Louisiana Bank. I think part of the problem in the argument
before they wanted to have their balance sheet look better. I mean, that's just obvious.
Well, I'm not a banker. Don't profess to be a banker. I agree with that, Judge. But for purposes of what we're dealing with, and when loss is such a critical calculation, the fact that you have a sale for $1.3 million it can't
well,
be ignored.
Not a recourse note. It's obvious that what it amounts to is it's an option. As long as the guy continues to pay this $1.3 million, okay, keep the land. But he's not going to, and it makes the bank's balance sheet look better. And when he doesn't pay up, they get the land back.
Well, what happened, Judge, is they sold it to a third party. The assets
now. Legitimate third party sale, isn't it, from the bank to a legitimate third party? So it's not some kind of sham between the bank and the loan person who got the loan.
It was.
Except that guy doesn't have any risk because it's a non-recourse note.
But Judge, I think, and again,
they've been doing this stuff for years and years. Tom Stagg knows that.
Counsel, we understand, I think, the point, and there's a certain fairness. It's almost sort of an estoppel, it seems to me, that you're arguing. But from prosecution and sentencing of this individual, from the government's viewpoint, the reality of the loss to the bank is the measure by which the harm caused by your client's crime is calculated. And, I mean, we hear you. You don't have any case law that really says, maybe some general terminology, that would support that we need to look at a transaction like that. Is there? Do you have?
Judge, there's no case law. I cited back to Louisiana public law doctrine. I still say that this wasn't a sham. It was a sale. And Judge Stagg rejected that. My problem is it was no longer an asset. Once the bank sold it, it was no longer an asset of the bank. The bank had a security interest in the property, but having a security interest in the property is different than ownership.
Okay.
However,
even if they don't take that number, there's still a problem with the PSR number that was adopted and the findings and conclusions the court made at the hearing, right?
Yes. Yes.
I get to that.
Okay. The property was sold. 2.5 years later, it was appraised by the Gallagher appraisal at $1,005,200. This is 2.5 years after the property was sold. Now,
at a million what?
$1,005,200. That's the Gallagher appraisal, which was done in 06, which, by the way, almost mirrored the first Russell appraisal that happened back in 2001, which was within the loan on the appraisal. The first appraisal was $1,339,000 and change. That appraisal is listed in Government's Exhibit 1 that was introduced. The bank discounted it 25% and kept it as security for on that basis. And that's in Government's Exhibit 1 that was introduced at the sentencing hearing. Thereafter, there was 80% of the appraised value was it took it down to $800,000. The government's argument is you take that $800,000, you subtract it from the $1,240,000.
Where's $800,000 come from? I don't understand.
In 2006,
yeah.
The bank president said, well, the FDIC came in and said, we overvalued the property, we got to reevaluate it. The assessment came in at $1,005,200.
Okay, they got an appraisal in 2006 of $1,005,000. Okay, then where does this $800,000 come from?
According to the president, and there's no record, but he says the FDIC said we couldn't lend 100% of the value. He says FDIC said we could only lend 80% of it. So that's how you get the $800,000.
80%. $800,000 is the 80% of $1,005,000.
Yes, sir. And it's rounded too. I think there's.
Okay.
And these appraisals, my position is these appraisals took place after my client owned the property. These appraisals, Mr. Corbell had nothing to do with the appraisals. What's interesting is the government says the guidelines provide that in the case of a loan with collateral, the amount of loss is reduced by the amount the victim recovered at the time of sentencing from disposition of the property. In this case, an $800,000 note on the bank's books, or if the collateral has been disposed of prior to sentencing, the fair market value of the collateral at the time of sentencing is the appraised value.
When was the sentencing now?
Sir?
When was the man sentenced?
He was sentenced, Judge, in last year, about this time.
Okay.
Exactly, he was sentenced on...
January 10th.
Yes, sir, and the judgment was entered on January 20th.
Okay.
Now,
go ahead, I'm sorry. Well, my question is, we can use the $1.3 million sales price, or we can use the $1,005,200 appraisal value. And if why shouldn't we use the $1 million with the $5,200? It's kind of hard.
Well, again, that was my first argument, but I've heard it. I know where the wind's blowing. I'm not going to talk into the wind anymore. I still think it's a valid argument because it's just a failure to distinguish between ownership and security interest.
Right, but I'm asking, is FLB, with the guideline you just read to us, the reason I'm asking the question now is you just read us this guideline, and it says you're supposed to use what was recovered or else the appraised value at the time. FLB did not recover $1.3 million. So it's not an accurate statement of the credit against loss, is it?
No. Right.
So why don't we use the $1 million, and then we would have harmless error, wouldn't we?
Well,
because your client would really be entitled to a bigger sentence.
If we use it, what would happen if we used the figure of $1,005,000? What would the guideline have been?
The guideline would have been 13 instead of 15. The guideline would have been offense level 13 instead of 15.
What would be the guideline range of imprisonment?
Oh, I'm sorry, Judge, but it's a level 13, and it would have made him eligible. Obviously, it's below 18 to 24 months. I believe it falls in Class C and would have made Mr. Corbell eligible for a split sentence. So he would have been eligible.
A split sentence, what is that?
That is that you can serve, if you're given a period of incarceration, you can serve up to 50% of it either in community confinement, halfway house.
Let me just say this, would it have had a low range of the guideline confinement been below the low end of that range, been below 18 months?
Yes, sir. And then
sure help if you could tell us what it would have been.
Well, Judge, I looked at it this morning, and I'm sorry. I just don't. But it's a split sentence. The reason I appealed this case, well, obviously I felt strongly about this issue and the critical nature of the loss calculation. Judge Elrod, the issue is, and this is where I depart with the government, the collateral had been disposed of at the time of the appraisal, the Gallagher appraisal. Gallagher appraised the property for $1,005,260. $1,005,260. That property at the time did not belong to the bank. The fair market value of that property was the appraised value, as talked about in the sentencing guidelines, which would have been $1,005,260. The $800,000 is a piece of property sitting over here. The $800,000 did not belong, the property did not belong to the bank. When the FDIC said, hey, we're going to reduce the amount to $800,000, that's the security interest. $800,000 is a security interest in the property.
They were saying the property's worth $1.5 million, but we're going to say that you don't get to value it at 100% of value, but only 80%.
Right. But that's
different. They weren't disputing the valuation of $1.5 million.
But that's the number that should be used according to the code as I read it. That's the $1,005,260 is the amount that you should use, and if you use that amount, you come up with the number that I had in my argument to Judge Stagg of $165,000.
It seems to me that you either do $1,248,000 minus $800,000 and you get $448,000, or you do $1,248,000 minus $15,200. And which would be the same, but the first thing I said would result in a 14-level enhancement instead of the 12.
Well, that was the government's argument. I don't agree with it. The government didn't appeal it. And we haven't even talked about the issue of credits yet. Issue of the CD, which the bank decided not to use for that loan, which would have been an additional $72,000, which was not cross-collateralized. The cross-collateralization document talked about one specific note, which was a bad note. This man did not get credit for $77,777, which is another part of my argument as to why it's too high.
But isn't that – I'm sorry, Judge Garwood. Isn't that $77,727.77 interest for the loan and not used for the principal, so it wouldn't be a credit?
Well, everybody else gave him credit, and it's not principal for the loan because you can take a look at.
That's right. It's not used against the principal.
No. You can't. It's interest. It's profit on other accounts. But for the president to come to the bank and say, hey, we didn't use this as principal, is different with what the FBI did after its investigation, what the pre-sentence report did, and the $77,000, that was security for the loan in question. The banker doesn't have the right just to take the loan and apply it to some that money and apply it to somebody else unless he gets
it to somebody else. He applies it to this man's interest.
He said he was applying it to other loans in this man's interest, other loans that had nothing to do with this case.
On other loans? I thought he...
And that's why the numbers are so out of... In Exhibit 4, which is attached to my objections to the pre-sentence report, that $1,115,000 that we're talking about, $900,000 went to pay off the very loan that this man talks about in Government's Exhibit 3. So
when a loan is due, there's the principal of the loan,
yes,
and there is accrued interest. They're both due. And if a payment is applied to accrued interest, as most loan documents say it will be, you don't get to credit that twice, once on the accrued interest and the other time on the principal.
My position is the CD was not security for anything other than this particular loan.
All right, but that includes the interest on the loan,
which totaled $1,248,000. He got zero credit. In fact, if you take government's, and I know I've exceeded it,
answer Judge Garwood's question. Go ahead.
If you take what the president of the bank brought with him, he's got $26,086.72 as a bottom line number, and he's applied it to all these other loans, which nobody knew about until they came to court. In fact, and I'm probably run out of rebuttal, but I'll leave you with this. This is the first case that I've ever seen where a district judge rejected the amount of restitution asked by a bank. The bank came in and asked for $502,000. When we got through it, Judge Stagg said, I didn't hear anything about that. I don't know where that number came from. So basically, I think what he ended up doing was you had 17, 15, and 13 levels. He picked the 15. I think my client should have been given, under any theory, should have been given credit for the CD that secured that particular note.
Thank you.
Thank you, judges.
Counsel, is this yours also, these papers?
Yeah.
Hate for them to get mixed up.
I think the issue boils down to, is Judge Stagg correct? There was no sale. And if there was no sale, then we look to the guidelines. And first of all, it's the 2001 guidelines. It's 2B1.1, and it's in the comment section. It is 2E2Is, and it says that the collateral, if it has not been disposed of by that time, the fair market value of the collateral at the time of the sentencing.
Well, the what was that?
That's in the guidelines.
No, what
and it's
what
a credit against the loss.
Yeah. What is the dollar figure of the fair market value at the time of sentencing?
At the time of sentencing, it would be the appraisal that was done in 2006, which is $1,005,200.
So why does it matter what was the maximum amount that the bank could have loaned, the 80%? It seems to me, as the comment says, you're looking at the reasonably foreseeable pecuniary harm that resulted from the offense, not this isn't an extra penalty for more money being loaned than necessary. That's ancient history. What we're looking at is how much was the actual loss. Why 80%? And they got the value of $1 million. Let's just say $1 million. It's too confusing to add the 5,000. They had the value of $1 million property. All the things we've talked about as to the sales. They had that value. Why discount it when you're talking about something like this?
I see what you're saying. It's the $1,005,200, and then you would subtract that from the actual amount of the loan, the unpaid debt, $1,248,000.
Okay, so the $1,250,000 includes principal and interest. The total loss resulting is that. I mean, that's what.
It did not include interest. It was just the principal that had been advanced.
Okay. Well,
now some of it was rolled in several times, but it was the bottom line debt, and everyone agrees that that was the debt. The only person that disagreed with that was the PSR, which did not have the benefit of the testimony at the sentencing hearing.
Okay, let me finish what I was trying to ask. If the $1,250,000 is the actual loss, but it does not include interest, why does it not include interest? Because that's part of the loss, accrued interest at the time that the loan went into default or whatever you want to call it.
Your Honor, I believe that that was the total amount that was advanced, and there were some roll-ins of interest at various times because the loan was in default periodically, and they used, for example, they used the CD to bring it current and pay some interest. So some interest was paid. But at the end of the day, it was $1,248,000, and everyone agrees that that's the amount.
Okay, but at the end of the day, I want to see, does that include the application of the 77,000 CD or whatever the amount of the CD is? I mean, that's where I'm headed with this. The $1,250,000 debt, if that is only the principal and just the CD is applied to interest without giving any credit. I'm trying to figure out how it was calculated that 70-some-odd thousand dollars was the proper amount for interest.
Your Honor, the CD was applied before the defendant he was in default, and they took that CD and applied it to interest on this loan to bring it current. They applied it to some of his other accounts which were overdrawn, and then they applied it to interest on one or two other loans that he had. So they cashed out the CD, brought him up current, and I don't recall precisely when that was, but that was several months before they actually let him know, we're defaulting you and we're going to foreclose on your real estate. And I believe that was when they discovered that the second mortgage loan was totally invalid. It was an invalid
pledge.
Why should
they get to credit it against these other accounts rather than putting it on here?
Your Honor, I believe they thought that there was a cross-collateral pledge agreement. I did not see it. The cross-collateralization is on the pledge of the second mortgage note.
Is it at least arguable that he should have gotten the credit for the CD if that was rolled in and
not
they were
all
using
of it,
it?
Because the note provides that the payments will be credited first to payment of interest and then to principal and then to late charges and collection.
But some of it, at least.
So some of it may have been, would be credited if there is indeed no cross-collateral agreement. I was under the impression that there was. I went back and just now looked at the pledge agreement that I see, and it does address only the that second mortgage note. It does not address the CD. So I don't know if there is a document that does address the pledge of the CD or if it was just taken by the bank.
Well, your view then is that $1.25 million is the proper calculation of loss. About $1 million is the proper calculation of the value of this property. And $250,000 would have been the amount that would have led to this sentence as far as the calculation of loss is concerned.
Correct.
Regardless of all the 80% and all that just falls by the wayside as not being something you're asserting. Well, how much difference when we're looking at the maximum is $70,000-some-odd on the CD, we have this issue of cross-collateral agreement, whether all of that CD should have been applied. Is how much does it have to get below $250,000 before it would matter in the sentencing?
It would have to get down to one penny below $200,000 because I believe the guideline sets up the
The guideline break is at $200,000.
Is it $200,000? So it has to be more than $200,000.
Well, we have $77,000 to play with that might get it below $200,000, depending on how this cross-collateral agreement works. Is that a fair assessment?
Your Honor, that's if you consider that there was no sale at the time of the at the sentencing. If you consider that there was a sale at the time of the sentencing, then you have to accept the government's calculation, which was done at the sentencing. And the government's calculation at the sentencing was that he owed $1,248,000. It is reduced by the $800,000.
Why the $800,000? Why not the million?
Because that's the admitted asset that the bank now has on their books. That if they have indeed sold it for $800,000, because that is all that this person, Aiello, was going to pay for it. The bank had a sweetheart deal with him. He was taking this off of out of their owned real estate column and putting it into something that would be admitted as an asset for the bank, and that was the $800,000 loan. But he was not personally liable on that at all. There was no guarantee required. He was not ever asked when it was supposedly originally sold for $1.3 million. He was not asked to come up with any money. He had no down payment, and his interest rate was 4.75, a sweetheart deal, as Judge Stagg found it.
Well,
so, and he was running it as a business, and the banker stated in his testimony that they did all of that so that the loan would perform. We want him to be able to make enough money to perform, to keep this loan going on the books and eventually maybe pay it off. And that was the bank's whole purpose. So if you look at it as a sale for $800,000, it's off of the bank's books. It's now on ILO's or Industrial Drive. Pardon?
What was the amount that he agreed to pay the bank? I realize it's a non-recourse note, but what was the principal of the non-recourse note?
At first, I don't know that
What was the principal? There's a document out there that man signed.
The ultimate document he signed was for $800,000, and they advanced him some small amount of money, around $124,000, I believe it was, so he could complete the improvements that Mr. Corbell had begun but had not completed.
Why do you say the ultimate document? It's like it's qualified, because it sounds like that's not a real complete answer.
Well,
so.
The bank, originally it was going to be $1.3 million. The bank was going to be home free. This man was going to pay $1.3 million for this property. But he could not.
Did he sign a note for $1.3 million?
Your Honor, I believe it was a loan application is what he signed. I don't know that there was an actual note. I know that there was a mortgage.
A deed?
I mean, a cash sale deed.
These things are done. The bank deeds him the land and recites in the deed that there's retained a lien to secure a note in the amount of what?
It was a cash sale deed, Your Honor.
And
it
what's
was
it
not
say
a
on?
Note. It was not a. It was a cash sale deed.
What does the cash sale deed say?
The cash sale deed says $1,300,000.
That's right. The cash sale deed says $1.3 million.
Exactly. Then the bank came back and said, "Well, we've gotten a FDIC required that they get an appraisal," and they said, "No, we can only lend you the amount of the appraised value." So it was going to be $1,500,200. Then FDIC said, no, you cannot lend 100% of the appraised value. You can only lend up to 80%. So then they said, okay, we'll lend you $800,000 on this. Well, this man doesn't owe anything but $800,000 for that property.
He put a deed of trust or something like that on the property, doesn't he? Doesn't the bank have a lien if it's not paid?
Your Honor, I would assume that they do have a mortgage for that. I have not seen it, and I don't recall that it was put into evidence at the sentencing hearing at all.
Okay. What evidence is his obligation to the bank, this purchaser's?
I did not see any evidence of it. Marty may have something, but I did not see it. What I recall is that the banker testified that IDW owes $800,000, and that is what they call themselves selling the property for, $800,000. So if they sold it for $800,000 and the original debt was $1,248,000, the actual amount of the loss is $448,000. And that the government explains that at pages 53 to 54 of the sentencing hearing.
I'm sorry, Jen. Go ahead.
We have to look at this de novo. What are the correct amounts? What does the record show? Or are we supposed to defer to Judge Stagg some finding that he's made? This is a convoluted standard of review case.
Judge Stagg made specific findings, and his finding was that this was a paper transaction. It was no sale. However, when Judge Stagg...
So do we defer to that?
Pardon?
Do we have to give that deference, or do we look at it de novo?
You have to give that deference. That's his finding of fact based on his review of all the paperwork and the testimony at the sentencing. That's a finding of fact. So it's clearly erroneous. You have to find that it's clearly erroneous to reverse that.
So assuming it's not clearly erroneous, we don't look at this whole 800,000 versus 1.3 at all, and we're back to the CD conundrum. Is that correct?
Your Honor, it would be, because you're looking at the difference between the appraised value and the actual amount of the debt, which came to $242,800.
Okay. Did he make a factual finding that the CD shouldn't be applied? Did he make a factual finding?
Your Honor, I don't recall what he – I don't believe he did. But he did adopt the PSR.
But he didn't really adopt the PSR,
did
he?
You admitted that. He says he is, but he's not.
So he didn't adopt the PSR. So you can't rely – in a normal case, you could rely on the PSR, but you can't in this one, can you?
Right. You cannot, because it is erroneous. It uses the wrong debt amount to start with. So you cannot really say it was adopted. I think it appears that, as Marty said, that Judge Stagg split the baby.
Let me just ask you, if you use this $242,000 figure based on the disregarding the sale and using the $1,005,000 value of the land, is the only remaining argument between the parties how much of the CD should have been credited?
Your Honor, and that is not clear. It really is not clear, because you have to make a finding, you would have to make the finding, that there was no cross-collateral agreement.
We don't make a finding, but there's no evidence. You can't assume.
There's no evidence.
Evidence of it, then there's no evidence of it.
Your Honor, I cannot say that for sure, because there were a lot of documents that were submitted, and some of them, pledge agreements have that, and I do not know right off the top of my head if there was a specific pledge agreement for that CD.
Do we need to send this back? Because the PSR says it counts a CD as a credit, and he says he adopts it. Do we need to let him make a determination as whether the CD should count as a credit or not, or whether he intended to adopt that part of the PSR or something?
If that becomes the critical issue...
Well, wouldn't it be the critical issue because it gets you below the $200,000, which would get you in the lower category?
It may. I'm not sure that it does, because the bank...
I would think it'd be real nice if we got up here and we would know the answers to these questions.
Well, we are catching you somewhat cold. You're not sure what's in the record. This is for our presider to do, but some follow-up information to us after argument might be useful.
Could perhaps could the parties outline the position with regard to the CD making a difference in a 28J following the argument?
Your Honor, that would be totally acceptable to me. There were a number of documents submitted in evidence at the sentencing hearing.
So why don't you point out to us in that letter what documents you think the two of you are relevant, or separate letters, whatever you can come up with.
Right.
And also, is this the only, if we accept that you take the amount of the loan and then you deduct from that the fair market value of $1,005,000, mm-hmm. if that's a proper way to proceed and conclude there was no sale, assuming that's a proper way to proceed, is there anything else at issue between the parties other than the CD?
No, Your Honor, it's just a matter of is there a sale or is there not a sale? And right. If there is a sale, is it 800 or is it $1,003,000? I think Judge Stagg threw out the $1,003,000, totally out of it. It's not clear whether he found that there was an $800,000 sale or not.
It was a phony.
Yeah. Oh, well, counsel, I think your position when this first came up earlier in your argument is to shift to it could have been worse. It could be $450,000. Is this a watch what you ask for, you may get it kind of position? The government, it would be your position, could revive this much greater. Is that still in play if we reverse?
Your Honor, we did not appeal the issue, but if it comes back for sentencing, it certainly would be something that the government could find. If there is evidence to support it, yes, that there really is not a sale at all, and that the defendant is liable for $448,000 of loss as opposed to $242,800 as Judge Stagg found, or he found $242,846.
Why would they be liable for that much? I just don't understand what. If you take the appraised value of them for $1,005,000, if you take that and there was no sale, then that's what I was trying to get.
Right, but Your Honor, the IDW. Is acting as owner of that property, so there must be some kind of a deed that transfers that property out of the bank's ownership to IDW. And the alternative in the guidelines says that in a case involving collateral pledged, the amount the victim has recovered at the time of sentencing from disposition of the collateral. And in this case, the bank has a loan on their books of $800,000. So this might be considered what they have recovered. They have not recovered the value of the appraised value of the property, but they have been made good to the extent of $800,000, which is this loan that is on their books and is a performing loan. And in that sense, that is what they have recovered. So if you look at that for the guideline, if you consider it a sale, it's a sale for $800,000 and no more. And a 28J letter with additional information that you ask for will be forthcoming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sir?
You got 4 minutes.
If the loan is $1,248,000, which total amount, you subtract from that the appraisal, the Gallagher appraisal of $1,005,200, and you give the defendant credit for $77,777, which is the collateral, which is the CD, then you're under $200,000. You're at approximately $165,000.
Yes, sir.
I still don't understand.
You would. If you got credit for the full amount of the CD, you would be. Now you did get some credit for the CD, didn't you? No, zero.
You got zero.
We got zero.
Okay.
Even though, and the only document that came into play was a document the president brought, and it was, and it's in the record. It's just a bunch of handwritten notes.
Right, but this is, I have a question. The district court stated that he had to consider the fact that the CD went entirely to unpaid interest and other charges and not to principal, which hasn't been disputed. So he says that's the reason that he discounted it.
Well, I think it has been disputed, and we disputed it at the time, and we made our presentation. Based on these documents, if you look at the collateral, the problem I have is that the bank just cannot take my collateral that I have in support of one loan and apply it over here without telling me. And a commercial pledge agreement says the lender may collect any of the collateral, and at lender's option, retain possession thereof while suing on the indebtedness. There was no suit on the indebtedness on these other notes. It was a unilateral taking of property which went to another loan, which, by the way, if you take $77,000 as security for loan A and send it over here, what's the bank supposed to tell the FDIC when they come in and say, hey, this loan's undercollateralized? That's why it didn't happen the way the bank president said it did. There was no procedure. There was no hearing. There was no nothing. The bank president just decided, I'm going to apply all this money over here to some loans that he never gave Mr. Corbell credit for. We don't know anything about that. That was not in this record. This $77,000 amount was a CD from day one. Was a CD. It was pledged. There were three things pledged: the property, the CD, and the note that was at issue. The property was appraised at 75%. The CD was a $72,000, and the note was the problem area. It was a $200,000 note, but it was discounted 50%. This CD over here had been securing this loan since 2001 to help on this loan. When they foreclosed, the bank did foreclose and ended up with the property. And when you foreclose, you get the security. The security for that property was the land and the CD. Then the bank sold it to the third party.
They had not taken over the CD, applied the CD before they foreclosed.
Judge, I don't have any record of that. What's in the record is that they foreclosed on the property, and that property was, and that's when it was sold.
I have a question. Isn't it possible, though, that this kind of be careful what you ask for could happen in this case?
Judge, I think it's since the government didn't object at sentencing, that to raise the issue now, I don't think they have standing to raise the issue. Now, I understand
we're not going to find him with a 14-level increase or whatever today. That wouldn't be appropriate.
This all arises from my lack of detailed understanding of banking law, but I just don't see how this $77,000 credit can disappear, and we discount the figures on the notes. But,
well, counsel, one of the things that the 28J letter, as opposing counsel indicated, needs to show us is where in the record is any authorization for the use of that CD for the other loans. So what documents that were introduced are there? So we shall see.
And what was found as a factual matter by Judge Stagg about these CDs as opposed to what we consider de novo?
Most of these loans say that banks usually require that payments are applied first to accrued interest.
But yes.
If the CD was applied to accrued interest, you'd get less than $77,000. I don't know what the interest would be and so forth. But
just one point of are we notified by the clerk, or do we, for these filings, do we have a certain amount of time? Do y'all set it to the clerks?
Usually we would just ask it be done in a reasonable time. If you'd like me to set a deadline, we can.
How soon do you think you could do it?
How fast do you want it?
Can you do it in a week?
Yes, sir.
Huh?
Okay. Do you want to file simultaneous 28Js within a week? Would that be satisfactory?
Sorry to me.
Within 7 days. I'll give you 10 if you ask for it.
I'd like 10.
You may have 10 days. Thank you. You have 10 days to file your simultaneous 28Js. I believe that's all the cases for today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Judge.
We will stand in recess until 9 a.m. tomorrow. Thank you.